It's Sal Capaccio.
I make a special Capaccio for you, right?
Oh, now that sounds really good.
Oh, you like?
Hey, get away! Get away from my wife with that!
What's the matter, Carpaccio, no good?
What do you do now?
They don't like a Carpaccio.
They like Carpaccio.
Oh. On WGR.
I make a Carpaccio for you.
Sports Radio 550.
I feel bad for Terrence McGee. He had a good career, and yet you say Terrence McGee, and word association is the non-touchdown return.
Yeah.
One of the greatest non-touchdown returns in the history of the Bills franchise.
The greatest.
Yeah, I guess it is the greatest.
In NFL history.
Yeah, and that's how he's remembered.
Kickoff return that didn't score in the history. I'm going to go ahead and pull this up on YouTube and take a still shot of what it looked like and how he did not score.
They should choreograph the return on Sunday, have him recreate it. Like, I mean, exact spots on the field that he covered.
Do you know how many tackles he broke or evaded?
I haven't watched the play in a while.
Okay.
You're pulling up the video?
I'm pulling it up.
Let's go to the Western Hotline. We're going to bring in our very own Sal Capaccio, who, of course, will be on the sideline Sunday at the stadium for the Bills and the Jacksonville Jaguars. And Sal's going to take us behind the scenes with the Bills, brought to you by Outlet Liquor for the lowest everyday prices across the state. Shop Outlet Liquor. Hi, Sal. How are you?
Good, guys. How are you?
What do you think? Can you get Terrence to recreate that play?
He might. I'm sure he's been asked about it many, many times. I'm looking at the box score of that game. 2005, by the way. Game in the Alamo Dome because of what happened with Katrina. Four returns that day for 159 yards total.
Wow. And no touchdown.
Well, the one would have been at least like 60 yards. I'm looking at it. And at the 25-yard line, there is one Saints player, and he has four available blockers. It's not his fault. I mean, the Saints player makes an incredible play, diving at the feet of the blocker and kind of just disrupting everything, and McGee gets tripped up at the five, and it is just the most devastating play ever. I'll tweet it out right now so we can all live in its glory.
He had a really good career, too, and I feel bad that's not the way I'm supposed to remember him. Sal's got an article up. Let's start with the offense and Josh Allen, who we expect to see, Sal, on Sunday. You've got an article up at WGR550.com, AAA, all about Allen, which, you know, and I think you appropriately pointed out in your article for a number of people, that was what 2018 was all about. It was for me. The minute he went in, the season now officially became all about how Josh Allen looks the rest of the season.
Yeah, but I think there's a few things at play here. When I say all about Allen, I'm not saying that I think that the team is only concerned about his development. I think what they're doing now is the recent moves they've made around the roster is, you know, we're going to give him more tools than what he had. We need to get a proper development on him and an evaluation on him, and we need to develop him properly. So where, as I wrote in the article, it was kind of a square peg round hole earlier in the year, which is, hey, we got this first-round quarterback rocket arm, but we're going to try and win games 13-12 like we did against Tennessee. I think the team realized, and Sean McDermott said this even, that they needed more speed on the field. We've seen that come. They've added Isaiah McKenzie. They've added Robert Foster, who was already on the team before that. They went out and they brought Deontay Thompson back. So suddenly, you know, this receiving core has more tools for Josh Allen to work with. They've added Wyatt Teller, who had a really nice game, I thought, against the Jets, who might be able to open some running lanes to allow LeSean McCoy. So I think now it appears, again, it's not, hey, we don't care if we win or lose. It's, okay, we're going to give him the tools that he needs. Hopefully we can win games along the way. That's still the goal. But now we get a better evaluation of our young quarterback.
So one thing that was interesting yesterday, offensive coordinator Brian Daboll talked about working with Allen during games, right? In between series, he would go over things with Allen, which I find to be encouraging and kind of cool. You know, as you kind of shift, not to say he was taking away from his offensive game plans on Sundays, but just that there was time dedicated on Sundays, if I'm not mistaken, right? That he went over things with Allen in between series.
Yeah, that's what he said. And, you know, they were down there the whole time. Allen was on the sidelines. Derek Anderson's been on the sidelines in the games that he hasn't played. So I think all of that was going on. They were talking to each other. I saw interaction between all of those guys, you know, throughout. So, yeah, between series, while the defense is on the field, you're not calling offensive plays. You know, it gave Josh Allen and Brian Daboll a chance to kind of talk about some things. And maybe, and I don't know this, maybe that's a reason why Daboll was even on the sidelines. Remember, he had been in the booth.
Right.
He had gone down to the field once Derek Anderson started.
Yeah.
That gave a chance for maybe, you know, for Allen to be around everything. You know, Allen's talked a lot about how he has learned a lot, you know, standing in the sidelines. I'm sure he would say that. But even so much, he always talks about how, you know, the leadership component and walkthroughs and practices and how he's supposed to go about his job like that. And I think that, you know, taking a step back, we all hope is going to benefit him, right? But you're right, Jeremy. That is something that Brian Daboll pointed out, that, you know, that they've been working together. He's been taking those mental reps, if you will.
Sal with us on the Western Hotline, 803-0550 to join us. We're also talking Sabres hockey with the game tonight against the Flyers. You can always call in and make a point on the hockey team and the win streak and tonight's matchup with Philly as well.
Don't let me leave you guys without making a point about the Sabres while I was in Vegas, okay?
You placed a bet on playoff odds or cup odds?
I'll get to it later. Let's talk about this, but I'll get to it. About that, yes.
I wanted to go back to what you were saying about Allen. And in your article, Sal, I think it's an interesting point. Now, I mean, Foster was playing earlier, but right, you have the speed of McKenzie. You bring back the speed in Deontay Thompson. You've made a change in one of your five starting spots. How much of an impact do you think that maybe coupled in with he's been out for a few games, he's watched from the sideline, he's watched Anderson, he's watched Barkley. How much do you think all of that could have in terms of an impact of seeing an improved Josh Allen over the final six games? By the way, assuming he stays healthy.
Well, look, here's the problem we're going to run into. He's going against the other best defense in the league, right, this week. So, I mean, as much as I think it can help him, as much as I think that, you know, we're all hopeful that's going to help him, I don't know if this week is a true fair gauge for how much it truly is, because he's going against a really, really good defense that, you know, just ate Ben Roethlisberger up until there was 17 minutes left in the game on Sunday. That also ate him up last year in the playoffs. So it's going to be tough sledding. And I think this is a game where maybe you got to do the Tennessee thing, right? Maybe you got to grind this out. This is what Dable talked about yesterday, too. Just kind of, you know, staying on schedule, all in the run game, the passing game, keeping everything where it's supposed to be, not trying to do too much. So we'd love to see that, and we'd all want to see Josh Allen go out there and go, wow, like that time on the sidelines, look what happened. He just beat Jalen Ramsey twice down the field on big passes. I don't think we should expect that on Sunday. I think what we can expect and we can hope for, and I think best case scenario is, you know, he has a efficient game, doesn't turn the ball over, doesn't make mistakes, gets in and out of the huddle the way he's supposed to, makes the right adjustments and reads, maybe makes a big play here or there. I think that would be nice this week to see. And uses those tools, and then maybe as they progress and they have the Dolphins the following week, you know, Jets and Lions, and the way the schedule sets up, maybe that's when we start to see more of that improvement.
With Thompson here, with McKenzie here, Kelvin Benjamin had a season-low snap percentage in the last game against the Jets. Are we seeing a diminishing role for him?
I think so, especially with the additions they have. Again, it all goes hand in hand, right? It's like a big puzzle. So Sean McDermott even said, we needed to get more speed on the field. Mm-hmm. Here they have these guys. Now, granted, Thompson hadn't been here yet. But here they have McKenzie. Here they have Foster. Well, if you're going to put more speed on the field, you have to take something away. And we all know that Kelvin Benjamin isn't the fastest guy out there, right? He has been kind of their, quote-unquote, number one. I think that is turning into Zay Jones. And it looks like, to me, you're transitioning from, and for two reasons here, you're transitioning from what you had in the receiver core, and you want a different skill set, so you're taking away from it, and that's Benjamin. And number two is, look, they're playing younger guys now. Teller's out there. Foster's out there. Levi Wallace is out there. I don't think Kelvin Benjamin is in their plans after 2018, so why not start, you know, pulling back on that?
You mentioned Sunday's game, which was really weird because, you as you said, Sal, for the first half and a part of the third quarter, but the first half for sure. As a Bills fan, if you're watching that game, you might have thought, hey, I'm glad Josh Allen's back. Oh, my goodness, he's facing that defense. And then, you know, then Ben Roethlisberger just, you know, pulls out the two late touchdown drives. But are the Jags still really good on defense?
They're still very good on defense, but they have some stinkers once in a while. It's weird. This is I would say there are, to me, three, quote-unquote, most disappointing teams in the NFL this year. Eagles, Falcons, I guess Vikings would fall into this maybe, but they're a little bit better now. Mm-hmm. And Jaguars, for sure. I think the Jags are the most disappointing team in the AFC. I did the numbers yesterday, guys. I know you talk about the defense, but real quickly on offense, they are averaging over the last six games the exact same number of points as the Bills, basically. They've scored 88 points, the Bills scored 87. And we all know the Bills' offense hasn't been that good. They're 0-6 in their last six. Now, you look on the defensive side, they've given up a lot of points. 30, 40, 20, 24, 29. But when I say they're good, I think they still have a lot of talent. And I would still consider them a very good defense. A lot of their numbers are still pretty good on a lot of the different, you know, run, pass, whatever, categories, rankings. But, you know, a loss like that to the Steelers, I don't know, man. I mean, they come to Buffalo. Maybe they're just trying to ride out the string now and get through this year because this has been such a disappointing year. Maybe people are just trying to save their jobs and wondering what's going to happen to them because I don't know what they're going to do in Jacksonville after this.
There's definitely an element of a similar theme, right, with them where the defense is playing well. And I remember a couple of weeks ago, I think it was after the which game would it have been? I can't remember it. I know after one of their losses, the stuff was coming out of how you could tell guys on defense were frustrated because the offense wasn't doing anything. I don't think the head coach trusts the quarterback. He doesn't trust him to throw the football in critical situations. And then when they lean on Leonard Fournette in the running game, it's just not productive enough. And I you know, that puts a lot of pressure on the defense. And it's funny, Sal, you look at Sunday's game, I think you'd probably feel comfortable betting the under with the two offenses that are going to be rolled out on Sunday.
What is the over-under right now?
37.5.
Pretty low. I think we're going to see a very similar game that we saw in the playoffs. I do. And maybe for Bills fans' sake, the difference can be that you have a quarterback that might be able to make a big play down the field, right? Maybe that would be the difference in this game.
Yep.
I think the Bills know this team. They've had now essentially 2 weeks to prepare. Sean McDermott said that after the players left last week, they started to get to work on Jacksonville for a day or so last week. I think you'll see the Bills do a pretty good job against the Jags offense. I don't think the Jags offense is going to be able to sustain much against this Bills defense, given the fact that last year they did a really good job of shutting down Fournette in the running game. The only plays they really had to speak of were busted plays or runs.
Bortles running.
Bortles running, that's right. And I think the Bills are better in that regard this year with Star Lotulelei up front and Tremaine Edmonds in the middle. So I think they'll be more equipped to handle those kinds of things. So I think that this game might just come down to can Josh Allen and the Bills offense make a play? I mean, what was the final score? 10-3 last year, right?
Yeah.
Maybe this year, maybe it's 13-10, and the difference is that you got a couple plays in the offense from Josh Allen. That would be great.
I hope the punters are ready. Get loose, boys.
I mean, did you guys watch the game? What were you thinking? Were you thinking about Doug Marrone? Were you thinking about Nathaniel Hackett?
I was laughing. I honest to God, I was actually the end of that game, the fourth quarter, the last drive for sure with the Jaguars. There was no way he was going to have Bortles put that ball in the air. I was really, really happy. Because they just ran, and then on the first two plays, he goes with the two tight end, two backs, and runs right into the middle of the line with everybody in there.
Well, if you go back to the drive or the second drive after the Steelers first scored, they're still down 10, the Steelers. So
16-6.
The Jags are still up 10.
Yep.
And the Jags had the ball at the Pittsburgh 39-yard line. And they had a second down. And now you could argue if they get another couple yards, maybe even they're right there, they can ice the game with a field goal essentially. I guess it would have been 13. So maybe not. They still would have had two touchdowns down. But they would have made it a lot harder suddenly. But They put the ball in Bortles' hands. He gets sacked for 9. He gets sacked for 7. Suddenly they're out of field goal range. So, can you blame them? I don't know. I mean, their whole situation with, Bortles has always been a kind of a mystery the way they've handled that thing. But I can't blame them for not wanting him to have to make a play. But sooner or later in that type of game, you almost have to.
But you know what? It's funny. I saw a comment. The last series, Sal, when they're at that 3rd and 5, right? So they get the ball. There's a little over 2 minutes left. They run, and they're facing a 3rd and 5. And they asked Marrone, did you consider passing the ball at that point, letting Blake throw the ball? And basically he said no. And I think it's because, again, and sure, he might be justifiably afraid of his quarterback.
Well,
but he said we had two things we wanted to do, either run Fournette or we gave Bortles the option to run it outside himself. They did not want him throwing the football.
They chose to bring Bortles back.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big,
right.
You know, you could say, well, their quarterback is limited. They chose that quarterback.
That's right. That's why I said, Jeremy, I think it's been a mystery how they've handled it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if they feel that way about him, why did they bring him back? Why did they give him an extension? I guess they just felt, and you think about who runs that organization, from Tom Coughlin to Doug Marrone, I mean, I think they just felt very similarly to kind of the way the Bills felt last year, which is, we're just going to play good defense, even maybe going into this year, play good defense and, don't let our quarterback kill us until we, develop him. The difference is, though, they have a quarterback that's been in now in, what, his fifth year, so it's totally different.
I have a league question. Go ahead. You wanted to?
No, I was going to ask Sal his Sabres thing he wanted to get to.
Oh, yeah, go. You know, that's actually the league thing. I was going to ask you about Rams-Chiefs, but go ahead.
So I went to Las Vegas twice in the last month or so. I was there on business a few weeks ago, and then I went back on vacation.
Quote,
with my wife.
Business, sure.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh, right.
And I checked the Sabres Cup odds when I was out there 2 weeks ago, and they were about 80-1, I think, around. Down to 40-1 when I left on Tuesday.
Did you
Did you play some money?
Take a little action?
No, okay. I don't think so. No, actually, and here's the thing. I think what I was told was that there were like 60 or 65 on Sunday. Like, wow, that's a dramatic jump from a couple weeks ago. But then when I look, because I think the new lines come out on Monday, on Mondays, they were only 40 where I looked. That's crazy. Wow.
Hey, were there
crazy jump?
Well, are there odds to make the playoffs too, or just it's odds for the cup?
Cup.
Okay. Now you can bet on to win the conference. And I think they're 18-1.
Really? Yeah. Wow.
I wouldn't be spending that money. All that means is that a lot of people have decided to put some money on it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You want to vote some stuff out of Thanksgiving Survivor Sale?
We can. Yes.
We've got time, and we've got some things to vote on. We're down to the final 15 contestants here.
Did you guys see who I met up with in Vegas?
No, did we?
Yeah, what did you tweet?
Very famous Buffalonian.
I feel like it would have...
He pours your beer at every Bison's game.
Oh, Conehead. Yeah, you saw Conehead out there, huh?
I did.
That's cool.
What was, it's got to be tougher for him to get a cold beer in Vegas. I mean, the guarantee is under fire.
Actually, he walks around and says, I need a beer!
Yeah, he's... Conehead is a good guy who we've gotten to know each other a little bit over the years, and I knew he was going to be out there, and he knew I was, so we hooked up and we had dinner together. It was really nice, and he was sporting his Saber shirt, rocking it in Vegas.
Very nice.
And he's all in, man. He's all in. It was really cool.
All right, here are your contestants. Al, vote somebody out. We'll each take somebody out of here. Sweet potatoes, stuffing, beer, liquor, family, friends, Jeff Skinner, the Lions Bears game. The Falcons Saints game, the turkey trot, rolls, pie, the night before, switching to holiday mode, and leftovers.
Okay, so there's only really two options here for me. I'm not a sweet potato fan, and switching to holiday mode, like, I'm not thinking about holidays. Like, I mean, it is a holiday, right? We're just going to enjoy Thanksgiving. So, and then I'm thinking about the turkey trot. I'm not doing it, and it's going to be super cold. We can just throw it out, and then everybody can say, yeah, thanks, Al. I don't have to go now in 20-degree weather. But I'm going to throw out holiday mode. I'm not switching over. I am enjoying the moment, guys. I'm going to enjoy Thanksgiving. I'm going to enjoy football on TV and unbuttoning my belt.
That was going to be mine because I also don't really get to holiday mode until like the 10th of December, really.
Right.
You know, I mean, people do their shopping and Black Friday is going to happen and Cyber Monday and Small Business Saturday. But yeah, for me, I don't really get to the holidays until like the 10th or so.
And the tree isn't even up yet. I mean, I can't get in holiday mode until I get the tree up.
We haven't even thought about where we're buying the tree yet.
So I will throw it. That was an easy one for me. It made it a little easier on me this year.
I got to figure out fake tree or real tree this year. We haven't even had that discussion. I'll save that for the Thanksgiving.
We got a new tradition. We cut a tree down. Yeah.
Can you get?
You guys ever been to the Grand Canyon?
Yes. I have. Yes. Have rafted through it.
Did you bring a tree back?
No. No.
I was just wondering if maybe.
A couple of things here, and I know you got to go.
It's grand.
It is amazing. The pictures do not do it justice. Right, you can't get the depth, right?
It is unbelievable.
I mean, it's incredible. I just recommend it for anybody. And, you know, we were only there for like an hour and a half walking around the South Rim. The other thing I will tell you, though, I am just amazed how many people are willingly
to go out.
Steps from
Oh, my
death
Lord, yes.
I was just to take pictures.
I was going
to
tell you, Sal, I don't have a fear of heights.
Oh, my
But when
gosh.
I've been there, it is dizzying. Like, well, I'm really afraid to get too close to take a picture.
It's not the kind of thing you can put a fence all the way around because it's pretty big.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're right. You're right.
But, Jeremy, these people just walk out. It's crazy.
You see them on ledges, right, where they can climb down and walk out onto a ledge to take great photos. And I'm thinking, no way.
I Googled. Deaths at the Grand Canyon.
Oh, it happens a lot.
Really? Oh, yeah. There's been five this year.
Oh wow! I didn't know that.
A lot of selfie deaths. Like, not even kidding. Oh, like, yeah.
It's and you see why.
Yep.
You're like, oh my gosh, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Wow. Man. But anyway, I did not do that. I did put a picture up, and like I was not that close. It looks like in the picture I am. That's why I took the picture that way. But there were definitely rocks in front of me, and I'm like, I am standing on terra firma.
Yes, I agree with you.
Howard, vote something out.
I am going to vote out Detroit-Chicago.
I
think the best football game of the day will be New Orleans-Atlanta, so I'm voting out Detroit-Chicago, even if Trubisky plays.
Okay. I'm going to vote out sweet potatoes.
Good call.
I mean, I'm not going to eat them.
Me neither.
Sometimes I do, and like, yeah, cool, they taste like candy, kind of.
I'd rather drink wine, like, but candy. Marty voted that out, so I can't now.
Brayton?
French guy voting out wine.
You got a lot more dramatic. No easy, I think there's one more easy elimination here.
I'm going to go with the night before. Rule out the night before.
Guess who doesn't want to hang out for tonight's game? Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. You know what? The whole city's just super excited about the Sabres game tonight.
Not everybody gets to enjoy the night out the night before Thanksgiving.
You want nothing to do with it. All right.
I guess the Sabres
aren't playing anymore.
Hey, this year it's important because the Sabres are playing and they're actually good, but it's just like most other times, it's like...
Wow. I agree, yeah. It can be a raucous evening out on the town tonight.
I was even thinking of going out tonight. That's how I'm excited about the Sabres. All right, Sal, we will we'll have a great Thanksgiving, first of all, and we'll talk to you for Football Friday.
All right, guys, thanks.
Thank you, Sal.